Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation, TGIF. We have survived another week of the Rhinos and the Obama Maniacs. I don't know who's worse, the Rhinos or the Obamaites. I can't tell, truthfully. I'm starting to think the Rhinos are more threatening to my sanity than the whacked out, mentally disordered liberals. I mean, we know who disordered liberals are. We know how they behave. We know how insane they are. We know that they're the danger to our survival. We know that. But when you have a CPAC convention that features guys like Bob Barr and Dick Armey, who have co-opted the Tea Party movement or trying to co-opt the Tea Party movement, who put out a list of 22 platform positions of their contract from America, and they leave out immigration, illegal immigration. They leave out English only. They leave out stop the voter fraud. They leave out all the cultural issues that we are fighting for the last 25 years in this country. Then you have to understand that the co-option of the Tea Party movement is a bigger threat to the survival of the conservative movement than is Barack Hussein Obama. Probably the most important political development in the last year certainly been the growth evolution of the Tea Party movement. They started with town halls. They went into tea parties. They caused a tsunami, certainly in Massachusetts. They stopped Obama cold in his tracks. And this grew out of Obama's attempts to turn this country into a socialized nation in less than a year. It arose from his bailing out of Wall Street, not Main Street. And the movement was born that had not previously existed in America. It is not really a conservative movement. It's not a Republican movement. But it's one that nevertheless rejected Obama's attempts to turn America into something other than America. And it frankly stopped the left-wing onslaught of the most powerful, most dictatorial president this country has ever seen. You see? But more and more we're seeing the Beltway Republican crowd, the neocons, the old boys in checked pants, infiltrate this movement. Michael Steele, the GOP chairman, has been meeting with the Tea Party to try and co-opt them. This week at CPAC, the annual conservative conference, they feature just enough faces of real Tea Party leaders to satisfy the crowd, and then they bring out the Rhinos, the John Boehners, the Newt Gingriches, and the Bob Barrs. Now, do you remember a few years ago when Bob Barr, former Republican congressman from Georgia, went to work for the ACLU? Do you remember that? He is the type of fifth columnist who's trying to destroy the conservative movement from within, in my opinion. And then there's Dick Armey, another rhino-type fake conservative who also worked for the ACLU, pretending to be, I'm a real Tea Partier. He and other fakers unveiled a contract from America. And while it mouths many of the Republican talking points, nowhere does it mention borders, nowhere does it mention English language, and nowhere does it mention culture. So, my friends, if you are in the Tea Party movement, watch your back. Look out for the phonies amongst you and beware of Republicans bearing grifters. Let's have some rock and roll for Rock and Roll Friday. 1-800-449-8255. Yes, this song is dedicated to Bob Barr, Dick Armey, and the CPAC crowd. Doesn't really work, but what else? It's good rock and roll. Whatever. Friday, I'm having coffee late in the day, I'll never sleep. I'm lonely, but no one can tell. You want to talk about this, or do you want to talk about something else? How come I'm the only one left in the media who talks about illegal immigration? What happened? You notice it's not even discussed on Fox anymore? The word Muslim, Islam, is never mentioned on Fox anymore. Have you noticed that? Well, what am I living in, some dream world? What am I living in? I mean, Fort Hood, Muslim shooter, right? Shall I go down the list or you forgot it all? War in Afghanistan against radical Muslims. 9/11, radical Muslims. Shall I go down the list or are you living in a dream world? Now Interpol is not looking for Islamic murderers, but Israelis who went underground to kill a Hamas member, allegedly. Now they're on the most wanted list of the European Union. They're doing what we used to be able to do before we got taken over by the rhinos and the phonies in the U.S. government, who will not fire a shot in anger. It's unbelievable to me. And nobody's talking about poor Lieutenant Behenna. Nobody is talking about poor Lieutenant Behenna. Again, I want to reiterate that you sent us another $50,000, which we forwarded to the Michael Behenna Defense Fund yesterday. And I want to thank each and every one of you who sent your money. This poor Army Ranger has been sentenced by the government to first 25 years and now reduced to 15 years of hard time in Fort Leavenworth for killing a known Al-Qaeda operative while serving in Iraq, if you can believe this. Yesterday I said on the show, I want you to understand that we do make a difference here on the Savage Nation. This is not just a radio show, okay? And even if you haven't sent him any money, even if you only emailed him or wrote him a letter, it's giving him the hope that one day he will be freed. Now, Ali Mansour, I don't want to go into it. Just read it on my website. It's too heartbreaking, frankly. I don't understand this story at all. I don't understand how they can take a hero ranger who did his job, whose mother was a federal prosecutor in the Oklahoma City bombing case, whose father works in a security agency equal to the FBI for a state. How could they do this to their son? I don't understand this. Something's wrong with the picture. And if only we still had real Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalists in America, they would have heard this show by now. They would have picked up on this story, and they'd start digging through it, saying, wait a minute, something doesn't add up with this story. Why is this young man, this Army Ranger, in prison for so many years? Why has he not been given the chance to defend himself the same way they're giving Khalid Sheikh Mohammed? Why is the government thrown the full book at this guy, an Army Ranger, while they go out of their way to tickle the back of Muslim terrorists? Why, oh, why, oh, why? Something is wrong with that story. I am not an investigative reporter. I don't have the staff to investigate this, but I'm telling you that if you are a young reporter, and you want the truth, and you want to make a name for yourself, go and dig into the story of Lieutenant Behenna's persecution by the U.S. Army and try to find out why they picked on him, why they threw the book at him, why they added charge upon him, and why they will not let him go. There's something wrong with this picture, and it will take an investigative reporter to do this, if only we still had them. You know? That's it, dead in the water already. I know the lights are on, but I don't know what it is. I'll tell you what it is. I'll tell you exactly what it is. It's Friday already. I'm a little spent from the whole week. I had a half a day knocked me out more than 5 days of radio. Would you believe it? Because I'm not just not that public a figure. I don't know how people do it. I really don't know how to do it. Yesterday, by the way, I predicted that the vast left-wing conspiracy would blame the Austin plane crash on the right wing, and it happened. I was right. The despicable, verminous, psychotic group called the Southern Poverty Law Center. By the way, they're not poor at all. So far as I know, they don't give any money to anyone poor. They enrich themselves. Mark Potok, perhaps one of the most dangerous men in the United States of America, in my opinion. He wrote the position paper, incidentally, in my opinion, he wrote the position paper that Big Sis published as a list of the dangerous people in America. It was Mark Potok of this shadowy, suspicious Southern Poverty Law Center that published almost the same exact paper that the Department of Homeland Security published last year, in which they said the real threat is not from radical Muslims, but from returning military veterans, abortionists, right-wing radio, etc. This same sorry case, Mark Potok, went on to the most despicable network of all, the one that works for Obama, because you got to remember, MSNBC would not exist was it not for the fact that GE funds them, right? So GE funds them because GE has major league trillion-dollar deals hanging in the wind with Obama for wind vanes and all sorts of green technology. And consequently, the way they did the deal was, is if you support me on NBC, MSNBC, CNBC, etc., said the Obama minions, we'll give you trillions of dollars in contracts, Mr. GE. That's how I read it. But then I'm one man. It's only one man's opinion. Then the Dalai Lama went to visit Obama at the White House, and he showed him out the back door through the past the garbage bags. I'm not a fan of the Dalai Lama, by the way. I think he's a con man. And I think that the U.S. is making a big error in cultivating the Dalai Lama because of the pressure of Richard Gere and the other lovers of furry creatures in Hollywood, truthfully. You know, I heard the story Free Tibet for years. What does the left wing want? What do these schmucks in Berkeley want? We should get into a thermonuclear war with China over Tibet? What are you people, stupid? For years, you were against every war America ever engaged in, but you're trying to egg America onto a thermonuclear war with China over Tibet. It's done. It's over. They're not letting go of Tibet. What are you people, insane? You don't know anything about China history? Well, what do you mean Free Tibet? What do you mean by Free Tibet? Who's going to free Tibet? You? Remember during the Spanish Civil War, at least liberals who were communists put a gun in their back and went over and fought with other communists. Why don't you go over and fight against the Chinese army, you schmucks from Berkeley? Put a gun on your back and go fight the Chinese if you're so concerned about Tibet. What a bunch of hypocrites. 1-800-449-8255 is my phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. Why am I the only one in America, in the American media, still talking about the threat of illegal immigration? Why has the CPAC convention not mentioned illegal immigration once? Why have the Tea Parties, by and large, except for the originals, abandoned the whole issue of the illegal immigrants and the cost to the United States of America, both financially and socially? Why? Why am I still talking about it? Why are you not talking about it? Why are you not talking about these things? 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back. Be here or be nowhere.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass.
And no one cares about politics. So, it's Rock and Roll Friday. We could talk about sinus headaches or something. I don't care.
Ring, ring, goes the bell.
Here's a confirmation of what I just said. Orrin Hatch just gave a speech that just came out minutes ago that says the Tea Party movement is threatening to tear the GOP apart. I swear to God. Senator Orrin Hatch gave a speech for the Tea Party movement. Work with the GOP or see conservatives lose more ground. He warned the crowd of 300 at a town meeting in American Fork Junior High amid jeers from Tea Party supporters. He blamed extreme conservatives for the 2008 defeat of Senator Gordon Smith. You know, Hatch, you're full of crap. Let me explain why. It was the extreme conservatives that caused the entire Republican upset in Massachusetts. How dare you? You, Hatch, are the reason that there's a meltdown in this country. You, Hatch, are the person who put Ruth Bader Ginsburg into the Supreme Court. It's time for you to step aside. We need a returning military veteran to run against this undertaker. There's got to be somebody up in Utah to take on this undertaker. What do you care? Why am I getting excited? What do I care? Average guy my age is sitting somewhere enjoying himself by now. But the thing is I don't enjoy myself sitting around doing nothing. I really only enjoy myself expressing myself. I thought about it this morning again. What's the point of living if you're not having a meaningful life? I don't understand how you can live unless you have a meaningful life. What's the point of living? To me, it's always been about the mind. You know, I don't, let's not go into it. You see the article on my website, Peacenik, Dictator-Loving Actor Faces Jail Time? That would be none other than Sean Penskowitz. Peacenik, dictator-loving actor, faces jail time. He kicked the photographer. Oh, but he's a peaceful man. He goes to see Chavez and Ahmadinejad, and he loved Saddam Hussein. Sean Penskowitz did this. Can you believe this? Sean Penskowitz, the boy, kicks a photographer, but he's a lovely liberal, loving liberal. Well, that's new to you. Court orders Getty to return priceless bronze. You're not interested in that either. That's the art background I have. The work is considered one of the greatest bronze statues to survive from ancient Greece and is attributed to Lysippos, one of the three great sculptors of the period. You got to take a look at this bronze of a victorious soldier that the Getty Museum has, that they have to return it to Greece now. You know, the stolen art thing. Amazing. How could they sculpt? How could anyone do work like that? You start with clay and then you turn it into bronze, but how do you get so skilled that you could do this? Well, it always real art always amazes me. True artists. I know you want me to fill in the rest. I'm not going to say the other side. That's all. You decide what real art is. We know that Elton John is not a real artist. That we know for sure. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I'm off today. I'm a little off. I have to admit it. I'm on Passion Flower from last night. I've been having trouble sleeping. My mind is like electrical storms every night in bed. I told you that. When I do a very hot show, that night I can't sleep. My brain is, the brain waves are so electrified that the dreams are vivid. It's the same dream over and over again. Again, I'm stuck at Heathrow. Again, I'm going to get on the plane. Again, I missed the plane. Again, I'm trying to find myself back to New York where I don't live. Again, I'm trying to get myself back to the house I grew up in Queens, which is, it's there, but it's not our house. And again, I can't, and I can't get on the plane, and I'm trying to get back and can't. What is this dream about? It's starting to obsess me. So I went back to something that saved me when I was like 30, 35, which is passion flower herbal tea. But don't try it from the health food stores. Most of it's hate. It's the health food industry is filled with the biggest fraud artists in the country. Next to Democrats, there's nobody bigger a bigger fraud than the health food racketeers. There's nothing in most of the health food. When you see a herbal tea, it's probably a straw from your backyard, from someone's backyard in Brooklyn, that they chopped up and put a name on it and charged $19.99. But the real stuff, real Passiflora incarnata, saved me in my 30s. And now I'm taking the distillation, the drops. Wow, does it knock you on your behind? It's amazing, but the thing is, I have the same similar dreams, but no excitement. I can sleep with this stuff. Why am I giving it away for nothing? I think I'm going to put out a formula, finally. Maybe I'll leave that as my legacy instead of liberalism as a mental disorder. People are stealing it now. They don't even know I said it. That's right. People are quoting liberalism as a mental disorder. They don't even know Michael Savage wrote a bestseller called by that title.
Savage.
The toy dogs play a role that is much larger than the dogs themselves, for they are the true companion animals.
I love this guy's voice. I've been going around the house all week talking to Teddy in that voice now. Okay, turn it off. Turn it off. I like that guy's voice. I've been doing it in my house now with the dog. The toy poodle is a joy to every household. He is a friendly, happy addition to any home. Friendly and happy both to seniors and to young children alike. However, the toy poodle must be continuously admired 24/7, or he will turn into a petulant small creature who becomes nothing but a walking bag of urine with fur. He has a great voice, that guy. He really does. I was reading today, where was this? London Daily Mail, we posted it, is that women in England want the man to be the breadwinner, and they want to turn their backs in high-power careers to raise their children, a study has found. Their mothers or even grandmothers lived through a time when women fought for full-time work and better pay, but they say today's generation is returning to the traditional values of home and family, looking to men to be the breadwinners. Isn't that amazing? Then you go down the article, it says more. The secret of a happy marriage, live next door to your husband. I say at least in a separate zip code. that'll keep it alive. Stepping back, today's generation of women is returning to the traditional views of home and family. Interesting, they wore aprons then? Look at that, an apron, a dress you come home to, look at that. Instead of looking like a post-op transvestite, look at that, they look like a wife, how do you like that? You see the outfits that the women wear today? It's unbelievable to me, it looked like a TV strip club, the outfit. But women, apparently they don't want it. The happiest men, those who valued the housewife role but also did some paid work. So that's what's going on in England. I didn't know they were still breeding in England, frankly. I had no idea. I realized that's revolutionary. White women in Britain are getting married and having children? Shocking. Don't let Gordon Brown here at the Libel send out the social workers to see what's wrong in those households. any one of these topics, perfectly fine. What do you want to talk about here on the Savage? It's Friday. Lighten up. Back off. Boy, that passion law slowed me down. I'm looking at the clock. It's not moving. The hands aren't moving on the clock. I feel like, remember, does anyone watch The Sopranos? You know I'm obsessed with it. I watch reruns. There was the one where the heavyset guy who was secretly gay runs away because they were going to kill him, and he hides in New Hampshire, and he's got a, so then the guy he's living with gets him a job in construction, and he's doing like handyman work, and he's out in the cold with a saw. He's this wise guy from New Jersey who's up there. He was a captain in the thing, and he's up there now with a saw, and he's trying to like time the day. And he starts at 8 o'clock in the morning, and he doesn't want to look at his watch because he's afraid to see the clock's not moving. So he starts thinking, well, it must be. He's looking at the sun. He's working in the cold. He's freezing. He hates it. He says to himself, well, I've been working. It must be 10, 10:30. Huh, an hour and 10 minutes. It's going to be lunch. And he waits. Then he looks at the clock. It's 9:15. It reminds me of the years I had jobs I hated. All right, now I swear to God, is this clock stuck? It's impossible. Nothing's moving. Normally, I can make the minutes fly by here. It just shows you why it's not good to be sedated. Maybe I'm born to be anxious. It could be that anxiety is my natural state of mind. It hasn't killed me yet. I think that being calm, and if I was calm, I'd be dead already by now. I'd be a liberal. You know, if you want to be calm, everything's fine, peace, love. I like Obama. Let's go. We'll get along, except if you're a mean white conservative. Okay, let's take the calls and stop wasting your time here. Because you got a lot you could do other than listening to me. What could you be doing other than listening to me? Nothing. It's a vacuum out there. There's nothing. I mean, I'm you. After the air, I'm you. I turn it on. It's the same thing. The smile button people, the Tea Party being co-opted by the Republicans. You know, no, I think that movement's going to be destroyed, by the way. Unless they catch on to the borders, language, culture message that I've been selling for 15 years. How can they survive? It's unbelievable to me. All right, let's go to Howard in New York. Howard, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, the rhino point that you just brought out before is right on the money. And here's one way that it'll be proven so. The Democrats are trying to say that if they can't get this health care bill passed, which obviously they can't right now.
They're going to do it through reconciliation, which means through dictatorial means.
And it's a violation of the Byrd Rule. So all the Republicans have to do is just check the Byrd Rule out. They're not allowed.
What's interesting to me is that the vermin on the left, mainly on MSNBC, the channel for Obama, Obama's channel, are actually egging the Democrats on to go to the reconciliation program, which means do it without anybody. Just do it by fiat. Do it as though we're in a dictatorship. Isn't it amazing how liberals have always wanted to live in a dictatorship?
You're right, and you know.
So don't you find it odd that all of a sudden you're hearing all of these commentators saying, "Oh, the climate in America has become very contentious. It's never been this bad." You got a naked communist trying to take over the government, every avenue of our lives, and the people stand up and say, "Niet, no, you're not going to do it." Suddenly, they're concerned about contention. Damn it, it's a sign of Americans standing up for their survival. What do you mean contention?
Be a litmus test against these rhinos, and the test should be the question posed to them. How many of you are for global warming? I guarantee you'll see more than half the Republican Party raise their hands.
Well, here you got Orrin Hatch, who ushered in Ruth Bader Ginsburg onto the Supreme Court in 91-92 when she was formerly the head counsel for the ACLU. Here's a guy saying the Tea Party movement is threatening to tear the GOP apart. Of course it is, Orrin. You should be thrown out. There should be a Kennedy-like meltdown of you in Utah with a real conservative winning. We don't need any more of these finesse-like, these fine Undertaker types. He's always been like an Undertaker.
The so-called conservative Bob Barr, who you brought out just before, when he was with the ACLU after leaving the Republican Party, he represented the most radical left-wing people. So here's a guy.
Howard, how come you and I are the only two people in America who know that Bob Barr worked for the ACLU, and this son of a gun is now speaking at the CPAC convention?
Suspicious of what the CPAC convention is about. Ann Coulter, for instance, who's supposed to be the darling of the conservative movement, guess who she wants to run as a candidate for the Republican Party in 2012? None other than Dick Cheney, who's an extension of Bush. I mean, it shows you where.
I have trouble with Coulter. Once I saw her to be the naked Jew hater that she was, I never liked her again. You know, once I saw that she was using Jews as whipping boys, which she did on television once. She Jew baited a host who's a liberal, by the way, but she had no right Jew baiting him, and he went for it. I didn't like her ever after that. I saw who she was. She's a schoolyard hag.
Poverty Law Center.
Ann Coulter looks like a post-op transvestite posing as a conservative in order to peddle books.
The Poverty Law Center, by the way, was also on none other than O'Reilly's show the other night.
What? O'Reilly had Potok on?
Had Potok on before CNBC even had him on.
O'Reilly's moved to the left because Glenn Beck has turned out to be such a firebrand. And he's so threatening to O'Reilly that O'Reilly's trying to move to the left of Beck in order to maintain some presence on Fox News. That's what he's doing.
Anyway, keep up the good work, Michael.
Well, okay. I have the eye that sees all. I'm like the eye in the sky in a Las Vegas casino. That's a good analogy, right? The eye in the sky in a Las Vegas casino. I can see when the dealers are cheating. I can see when the pit bosses are cheating. I can see when the gamblers are cheating. I mean, to me, you know, that's an interesting analogy. I am like the eye in the sky at a gambling casino. I'm the guy walking up on the catwalk reviewing all the computers, and I'm telling you that I see the Republicans dealing from several different decks, et cetera, and half the people at CPAC basically are dealing from two sides of the deck. But the people are, you know, easily gulled because that's the way it is. Again, it moved 3 minutes, the clock. This was 3 minutes, the whole segment with Howard? The whole thing was a three-minute job? It's impossible. I don't believe this. I feel like I'm on some kind, like I'm on glue. And all it was passion flower. This is shock. Oh, come on. I didn't take Purple Rain. Cut it out. Play it, though. Go ahead, play it. You guys are just playing with the, you're pulling my chain. Go ahead, play it. I love that song. Unbelievable. Jimi Hendrix was like a boxer with a guitar. He had the movements of a, you know what I'm saying, like a great, heavy, like a great, I don't know what his size was, but he would have been like a boxer with a guitar. I watched a couple of boxing matches last night on Showtime, and it was amazing. There's one thing I want to just mention about it. I don't know all the boxers' names, but what impressed me was this. There was a black fighter in England fighting a British hero. No, it was a black fighter in England whose mother and wife and children were in the audience. And he was vastly, you know, booed and this and that by the audience, which was, of course, rooting for the local British champion, I think, Arthur Abraham, who's an amazing fighter. And in the beginning, the black fighter was getting the best of him. He was knocking him all over the ring. It was an amazing thing to watch. But in the last seconds of the last round, Abraham knocked out the black fighter. He clobbered him with a right cross, and it was shocking to see. What I'm getting at is you saw the mother, and you saw the wife and the children. There was no hatred in their eyes. That was number one. Now, the next fight was, again, a black fighter against a white fighter, and I forget where this one was, but he was Bosch, another English guy. His name was Bosch, I think. And the black guy won. He knocked. Oh yeah, Bosch was the champion, and the black fighter had the white fighter on the ropes, cut his face a couple of times, truthfully with headbutts. But he was hitting him pretty good too. He headbutted him twice and split his eyes open, the eyelids open. The guy was bleeding, and the white guy was bleeding. And then the camera goes to the wife and the children of the black fighter, and one of the children says to the mother, "Mommy, what's the matter?" And she says, "Well, his eyes are bleeding." And the child says, "His daddy's eyes bleeding." You know, just what a child would say. They can't even follow the act. She says, "No, daddy's eyes are not bleeding." But there was no hatred. There was no, like, Al Sharpton screaming, "Yeah, kill him." Nothing like that. It was amazing to me to see the dignity of the fight families there. It was amazing to me. What also was amazing is to see that both black men who were fighting had a thing for the youth of the country to see of any race. Particularly when you see the rap stars portrayed as the role models, when the role models should be these fighters who seem to be family men, which is an amazing thing. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah.
Allegedly, the Austin kamikaze pilot was not playing this in the plane as he went into the IRS building. We'll have to tune into MSNBC to find out if they have any conspiracy theory as to what music was being played in the aircraft before he crashed the airplane. You have... Nah, I don't even want to play them. What time is it? 51 minutes? It's like the character in The Sopranos. I don't believe it. I feel like I'm sawing wood in the ice cold here. All right, I'll take the call and I'll let you do the show. I really would rather listen to music, frankly, and just have fun today. But all right, you won't leave me alone. I told you already the Tea Parties are being co-opted by the Republicans. You didn't listen to me. I told you that. I told you I don't like the Dalai Lama, and I don't think that we should back him. If the liberals really believe that Tibet should be freed, let them put a gun in their back and go fight China. You know what I mean? Let them do it. The Spanish, remember the Spanish-American War? All the commies from New York and Brooklyn. They all put a gun on and went to kill Republicans, so to speak. And they fought against the fascists. They fought with the commies over there in Spain. At least they put, you know, their bodies on the line. Go fight. Go fight the Chinese. Go ahead. Leave Berkeley. Leave Austin. Leave the West Village. Put a gun on your back and go fight for Tibet. The Tibetans don't even want to fight China. What are you, nuts? What are you egging them on? And a Dalai Lama, I don't know. I don't go for it. I don't like with the bare feet and the whole act already, the Holy Man Act. The Gandhi Act is over a long time. There's no need for that already. You know, we heard it all before with this whole act already is 50 years old. With the robes and then the gold teeth and the spitting the garlic breath and the no, I'm sorry. Well, what's his gripe? He's doing well. The Dalai Lama goes to visit Obama. Can someone explain to me why we should care about the Dalai Lama and Tibet? Can someone please explain that to me? That's my problem, the Dalai Lama and Tibet? You want a thermonuclear war with China? That's what you want to go to war over? It's unbelievable to me. Let the guy move to Los Angeles, apply for some of the stimulus money, open a bowling alley or something called Dolly's Lanes, and that'll be it. He'll make a good buck. Dolly's Lanes, and that's it. He'll make a good buck. So he'll cater to the expatriate Tibetan community. You know, they can cry over spilled yak milk forever about the lost country. That's like saying we should go to war with someone over the South or something here. Lama Lanes. Oh, stop it. Lama Lanes. Don't do that. He's on the C-SPAN now. Let's hear a little bit of it.
But without sort of what's it, using force. So this is very much related.
Okay, turn it off. I heard this. I know the Holy Man racket. You know, they usually go to, you know, the salons of the aging women on in the rich neighborhoods. The husbands are... That they usually, yeah, I know the whole racket. They live very well. They don't work a day in their life. All they do is go around and bow and put their hands in front of them. They live high on the hog. What are they? I don't go for the whole thing. Is there anyone listening to the show who tells me we should go to a thermonuclear war with China over Tibet? One person explain why. One person explain why to me. You want to start an insurrection now in Tibet? Okay, you don't want to talk about it. Georgia, on my mind. Amy, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage, I have a theory about why you're anxious and have anxiety.
I'm not anxious. I took my tea. I'm not anxious. That's the problem.
Okay, well, then my theory shot this.
No, you're saying why I'm a high-strung guy. I mean, I'm wound up very tight. That's how I am all the time. But I would argue that that's not bad for a person.
No, it's not.
I think that this whole medical theory that you need to be calm and relaxed is rubbish. I don't think, first of all, I don't think calm and relaxed is a natural state for human beings. That's number one. And I don't think it's a natural state for animals. You look at animals, whether they be on land or in the sea or flying in the air, you're telling me they're all calm?
You have to have passion. You have to be able to get worked up. I can't stand people that just...
let's just get along. Peace and love. Let's all get along. Right, right, right. Well, no. I mean, there's a limit, though. You don't have to go crazy, though, with your anxiety. On the other hand, you don't have to, you know, bludgeon people with it either. Thanks for the call. I need some Southern Fried Chicken tonight, I think. I'm strange. Because I saw the name Atlanta. It reminded me of the best chicken I ever had in my life. And I don't even like chicken today. You can turn it off. It's not funny, okay? I was on a bus when I was 17. We went to Miami. It was almost like out of Ratso Rizzo in Midnight Cowboy. We couldn't afford to fly. So we took a bus from New York's bus terminal to Miami. It was for a Christmas break. And it was nonstop. So the bus stops in Atlanta, naturally, because I'm food-oriented, and I always have been. I figured, what am I going to do in a bus terminal? I'll try the fried chicken. I swear to God, to this day, it was the best fried chicken I ever had in my life. Of course, I was younger. What did I know about food? It was unbelievable. It really was great Southern Fried Chicken in a bus terminal in Atlanta. Of course, those were a different day. You know, who rides a bus today to Miami? I still remember to this day getting off the bus and the feeling of the soft tropical air in December. I had never felt anything like it. I had no idea that opposite the slushy New York, overcoat, muffler world, there was actually a world of warmth. I had no idea it existed. Now that I have a house in Florida, I don't go to it because I don't like Florida. It's a strange thing. It's an amazing thing. I don't want to leave San Francisco. I got a house sitting there with no one in it, and I don't go to it. Why am I not in Florida right now? A, because I don't like Florida. B, I hate travel. I hate traveling. I've come to the conclusion again that I will never get on an airplane again if I can avoid it. Never. I don't want to go anywhere on an airplane. Never. I don't care, private or public. I don't ever want to fly again.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Gentlemen, welcome to the first-class cabin of talk radio, where the air is recirculated more regularly than it is in coach. This is not a bad analogy either. Did you know that a cabin air in an airplane is circulated more frequently in first class? That's like my show with more ideas. The rest of radio is like coach, where you get hypoxia in the back of the airplane. Anyway, here we are. We're all wonderful. We're all great. At the end of the day, we're nothing. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, which is why I admired Biden with the ash on the head the other day. His politics stink, but I like that he stood up and showed his religion so plainly. No, that I did. That I did. Politics, the worst. Almost is becoming almost as leftist as Obama now. Now he wants to give up all of our nuclear weapons. Boy, oh boy. It shows you when you hang around with a radical leftist, you become crazy altogether. We also talked about in the Savage Nation the co-option of the Tea Party movement by the Republican Party. Boom, I was right, and it's happening. Then we talked about Lieutenant Vahana, how he's been railroaded. We don't know why. With a sentence of this nature, there's a railroading. Somebody within the government wants to punish his mother or his father, in my opinion. I don't have the facts, but if there was a great investigative reporter somewhere in America, they'd look into this case. It's on Michael Savage. And we sent them another $50,000 of your money through the Savage Defense Fund, Savage Legal Fund, rather. No, it's the Savage Defense Fund. And the total now is over $100,000 that we've sent, because his poor parents have had to mortgage their house to defend him. The government has unlimited money. So, you know, whatever you want to say about me, don't say one thing about me. I always go to the defense of the defenseless in this country, whether they be dogs, gorillas, elephants, or Marines or soldiers. Those are the most vulnerable groups in America, the soldiers and Marines. They are the voiceless in this country. Don't tell me liberals are suddenly the most vulnerable group in America. Are you crazy? So I'll take your calls now. That's all. Whatever you want to do, we're going to take calls. We're going to start on the West Coast now, work our way east. We're starting in San Francisco on my new affiliate, 860 on the dial. Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Tom?
Dr. Savage, thank you. You're one of the most naturally funny people that I've ever run into, and probably one of the most intelligent.
Thank God you added that, because I was getting edgy already.
No,
I'm joking. I'm past caring if someone says you're funny. I don't even, you know, if that's all they hear, that's fine. I don't, whatever they hear is good.
Amicable, amiable. You're a great, great writer. I love your books. And
Tom, that's very nice of you, but I want to say something funny. 30 years ago, I wrote a book. I'm not going to mention the title. The San Francisco Examiner at that time, a real newspaper, wrote, "The wealth of Michael Savage's knowledge is overwhelming." Now, today they won't even review my books because I'm a political conservative, to show you how far they have sunk from their original roots as a decent newspaper. Anyway, what makes you call today?
Well, we actually have something in common. I spend a lot of time in Samoa and Fiji.
And, oh, my God. What do you do in those islands?
Well, I'm a kind of a broken-down old airline pilot, and I go down there to see friends. I scuba dive every once in a while. There's a boat stranded down there that I'll get into shape and help get back to the state.
So, in other words, you know how to live, and I don't. I'm sitting here stuck in front of a microphone, and you're swimming in warm water.
You're a sailor yourself, and you love animals. You're a voice for soldiers, and as a veteran, I thank you for that, sir.
Well, that's very nice, Tom. But let me ask you something. What kind of planes do you fly down in those islands? I've always been curious. You fly the big babies, or what do you fly?
I used to be a chief pilot for an airline that was in Pongo Pongo. We were flying de Havilland DH-6s, the Twin Otter.
Oh, I've been on those in those days. You're talking about in the 70s, 80s?
Actually, this was in the 90s.
It shows you how far back I go. I first went to Fiji in 1969. Can you believe it?
Oh, yeah. You probably were flying around in Islanders there.
First of all, I was flying Pan Am. That was number one. Great airline. The uniforms that the stewardesses wore were still the most beautiful in the air. It was a different universe in those days. But I think we were flying in those days on 707s, and early on in the 70s, the 747 came in, and I would go out of Honolulu to Nandi on 747s. Those were amazing planes in the early days.
Yeah, well, I was last flying the 747 for a cargo airline, and it's a great airplane. Wonderful.
How the heck that plane was so far ahead of its time. Tom, I want to harken back with you for a minute, because it touches a couple of memory buttons in my head. I remember flying in the late 60s, early 70s on those long hauls out of the islands after collecting plants. We would sit and drink. I would drink beer the entire flight back, 6 hours. I would drink beer from the time I got on until I landed in Honolulu. I'd be back there smoking and drinking. Do you know that a few times the captain would come back and join us for a drink in those days?
I don't doubt it. today everything is, you're under the microscope because of, a few rotten apples. But, that was when people used to wear coat and tie on airplanes, too.
And they used to have a bar upstairs in the bump on the 747. Remember those days? They made it into a bar?
Right. Yeah.
So what's the climate of the people down there in American Samoa now?
Well, I don't spend a lot of time in Tutuila.
So you're going mainly to Pango?
Well, I fly into Pango or into Nandi, but I like to go off to Tau or Ofu, which are the islands to the east. And I really love Western Samoa. The people there are a completely different breed of cat from American Samoa. They've not
yes.
been co-opted by welfare dollars and American aid.
And they still have a little bit of their tradition. They still live in the bure, the long huts, and they sit in circles and drink Yangona. They still do that?
Yes, yes, they do. I've spent many a night with families there. They're absolutely dirt poor, and they have been since the copra trade collapsed back in the 20s, and they had a devastating...
But wait, Nancy Pelosi's husband owns some tuna packing plants in Western Samoa, doesn't he?
I don't know. I
yeah, that's why there was a special subsidy in one of the stimulus bills for the tuna industry in Western Samoa, if you want to make this political, according to what I know. So, Tom, you live here in San Francisco.
Well, actually, I live out in the valley, but I spend most of my time listening to your show on the sports station in San Francisco.
Yeah, I want to ask you something. How did you find out I went over to this new sports station? How did you discover that?
I was listening on 840 KMPH, and, you know, as you go over the pass into the Bay Area, you lose the Valley stations. So I was looking for talk radio one day, coming back from an appointment in San Francisco, and I happened to stop at the sports station, and there you were, you know. So
I'm the only talker on it. Can imagine all sports all day and Michael Savage conservative on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Tom, let me send you a new book, the book Banned in Britain, so that you can add it to your library. I really did appreciate speaking with you. You sound like an old friend, somebody would have had a lot of fun having a few drinks with in the grand old hotels of Suva. God, do I remember those days, the gin and tonics. My God, those days are gone. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me.
It is the Savage Nation. Another rainy weekend in San Francisco town. But I'm going to dinner with Congressman. Well, play it for a minute, Bobby's. How can you beat the melody? It's unbelievable. He died too young, this guy. Heart attack, 35. Just scared a lot of guys in their 30s. All the joggers, perfect shape, drop dead, boom. All right, no, it is true. In the 30s, the toughest age for a man when you hit 30. 29, 28, you still think, I'm immortal. I got time to think about it. Nothing to worry. That's in the future. One day I'll live probably to 80, 85, all my teeth. My hair will turn a little gray, and I'll still be in good shape, but I'll just one night decide I've had it and go, sure, that's just how it works. How it ends is you usually wind up in a nursing home, suffering with your family abandoning you, facing a curtain, unable to move, with a illegal alien beating you about the head and neck with a rubber truncheon, stealing your small change. And that's basically, that's the way of all flesh. But no, 30 is very hard for a man, because at 30, you realize, okay, you're mortal, and all of a sudden, no matter how much exercise you do, the abs, you don't have the washboard. I don't care what you do. The washboard starts to become a little, there's like a flab. You get a few gray hairs, the mortality clicks in, and you're usually checking for that pseudo heart attack at least twice a week. Oop, there it is. You know, you're riding along. It's true. I've said this once before on the show. A lot of 30-year-old guys laugh hysterically because they don't realize that they're not the only ones doing it. Oh, what was that? Oh, is this it? You think they're going to crash into the Throg's neck, off the Throg's neck bridge or something? He's like, you're in your 30s, aren't you, Phil? 35. Do you get those tinges? And does your mind rush to this is it and I'm dying? Yeah, no, it's horrible. But at 40, you actually don't care if you're dying. See, by 40 already, you accept it and just think it's a time. No, no, seriously. It gets easier at 50 is the easiest because you realize there's nothing you can do. You may as well enjoy yourself. That's not true either. Truthfully, that's when you have to work the hardest. There's no generalization. You know what the story is. Moderation in all things except moderation. I think moderation can kill you faster than anything else. If you try to be too moderate too often, you're probably going to either die of boredom or you're going to die of something that you didn't expect anyway. You know, you can't measure your life out like you're a metronome. You got to let yourself go once in a while, too. I don't know what I'm telling you. I don't even know people. I make believe I'm in a cafe talking to people. No one asked me about this. Why am I going on? No one asked me what I think about life or anything like that. How did I get into this all of a sudden? Las Vegas. Brian, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
I got two questions for you, Dr. Savage. First question would be, I want to know age and what the event was when you first realized that you were a dumb kid and didn't know anything. Your father was a very smart man. And did you ever reach a point where you felt you had reached your father's dreams by becoming a better man than he was, if that has happened?
That's a tough question. That's a really tough question. Now, the first question is, when did I first realize I was stupid?
Well, as a teenage kid, I passed the point where I realized, as a young man, I didn't know anything, and my father was pretty dang smart. And
Well, I don't know that I ever felt he was smart in a certain sense. He had a natural wisdom about him. But like all men, we have our limitations, of obviously myself included, and I don't know that you can judge another man's intelligence. How do you gauge another man's intelligence?
Personally, by how they live their lives, the words that they speak, as well as their actions.
Okay, I agree with you, yes. You know, it's an interesting question. I met a young man about 6 months ago who had no money. He worked for another young man who was extremely rich, a billionaire. And I asked him something about happiness. And the poor guy who worked for the rich kid said to me, "Who is happy?" He says, he who is happy with his own lot is happy. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if you are content with what you have, you're a rich man. Oh, right. Who was a rich man? He was happy with his own lot. That's how it went from his religious teaching. He was Jewish and he had it from his religious teachings. Who is a wise man or who is a happy man? He was happy with his own lot. Something to that effect. Now, you know very well that that could apply to virtually any level of society.
I agree.
But now, with regard to the second part of the question, did I exceed my dad? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I'm at a point in my life where I realized when I was younger I was not real intelligent. I reached a point where I realized that lessons my father had taught me were definitely correct, even though at the time when I was younger I didn't think so. And I'm past that point, but, you know, my father's still alive. I'm not at a point where I think I've surpassed him, which I think is every man's dream, is to have his children be better than him.
But that's the American way, is that the child is supposed to surpass the father. That's the way it is. And the wise father accepts that and admires the son who steps beyond him. That's the way it's supposed to be in the society of upward mobility. Now, of course, that's all come to a crashing halt with the economy being the way it is. The society is not moving in that direction. People don't have that opportunity. In many ways, you could look back and think your grandfather was better than you.
True. But I also don't.
You see, but look, I don't want to compare myself to any others. All I can tell you is that I'm an extremely competitive person. I have driven myself from the earliest age to succeed and excel, and nobody did it to me. I did it to myself. It's just inherent in me. I whipped myself on every day of my life to do something more and to do something better and to break through that invisible. Membrane that separates us from the ordinary and brings us into the extraordinary. This is something no one can make you do. And What Makes Sammy Run is a book that's been written many times before, in many ways, in many cultures, in many ages. I don't know why one man pushes himself and the other man doesn't. It does not denote a special intelligence. It denotes a special ability to push oneself. The old 99% perspiration, 1% inspiration, the mark of genius story. It is, my friend.
Savage.
very high percentage of young people overweight because of a number of things that have happened in our country in the last several years. More and more people are having trouble paying their bills in this bad economy, as all of you know. And ironically, they spend the little money they have buying food that's high in bulk and caloric content, but low in nutritious value too often.
So there's Bill Clinton now talking about the most important problem on earth, childhood obesity. Not radical Islam, no, but childhood obesity. That was the speech he gave today. I guess the next campaign for Bill Clinton will be to speak about morality to teenagers. I think that should be his next campaign. Tell young high school girls that morality is the most important thing for them. It's unbelievable to me. It's an interesting story coming out of New York. It's sad in a way, and that's Bernie Kerik. I mean, this is an amazing American tragedy. Bernie Kerik rose from being a beat cop to becoming the chief of police in New York City under Rudy Giuliani. And from there, he was picked by George Bush to become the, the chairman of, the Secretary of Homeland Security. Frankly, he would have been a better Secretary of Homeland Security than what we have now. Anyway, he was indicted for accepting work on his house from contractors who he did favors for to the tune of $250,000. He's lost everything. He's going to jail. He is leaving a wife and two little girls behind to go to jail. The story is amazing. He said he was spending $200,000 to $400,000 a month on lawyers. You hear this? He lost everything. It's cost tens of millions of dollars. The lawyers take money, as you well know, and you get nothing out of it. I have since discovered that in my struggles with the government of Britain. Many of you have contributed money to the Savage Legal Fund. I got to tell you that I'm still struggling and getting nowhere because when you fight a government, you can't win. The government has nothing to lose. Don't you understand? They have unlimited money, unlimited lawyers. So at this point, I'm waiting in England myself for a change to a conservative government, and I will then appeal to them with the fund. We'll see what happens then if they really do anything. But going back to Bernie Kerik, he said from October to the end of the year, it's cost $500,000. He showed Cindy Adams his legal bills in the New York Post. Nobody can afford that. Added his wife that her business isn't working. She hasn't been in the workforce for 11 years. He said it's cost tens of millions, $200,000 to $400,000 a month for lawyers. My consulting company's gone. Potential is gone. I'm into hock. Nobody understands the magnitude of what happens. Anyone who goes this road had better be prepared financially, he says. I made mistakes. I'm sorry. Very sorry. I couldn't be more sorry for what I did. There is a price to pay, and I'm paying it. Now, here's the punchline of the story. She asks, and what would lead a man held up as a 9/11 hero to commit 8 felonies? Here's what he says. I guess hubris. Maybe I got involved in my own celebrity. In that position of power, you lose sight of things you shouldn't be doing. It's arrogance. You get caught in that power. In that higher position, you almost think above the law. You don't focus. You don't think things through until it hits you. See, now my view of this case is he's pled guilty. They should have given him a light sentence, and he should have done community service. He has tremendous skills he can give this country in the area of Homeland Security. He should be advising our Department of Homeland Security rather than the political appointee that we have called Big Sis Napolitano. But then, look, maybe you disagree with me. Let's go to the callers. San Francisco, 860 on the dial. Greg, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I am probably the 1% out there that likes your show, listens to you, and disagrees with you 98% of the time. However,
yes,
despite the fact that I'm liberal, despite the fact that I am an attorney, I am so glad to see that you are back on the air in the Bay Area.
At least you have somebody to bounce ideas off.
Exactly. If you don't have the two extremes, you don't have the give and the take, then you lose everything.
Yes, and in San Francisco, there's only one opinion that's permitted. The newspapers are hopeless. They're amateurish left-wing, diatribes. They really don't take any other side of the story. In radio, it's all left-wing all the time, by and large, or rhino Republicans on the other station. I'm really glad. Look, I think that in San Francisco, it's interesting, Greg, that you called and that you found me on 860. It's very interesting. I'll ask you in a minute how you did because it's interesting. It's an all-sports station. I think that in San Francisco, it's especially important to know that how did I attract such an audience over 15 years? It can't be all conservatives since it's such a liberal city. Many liberals came to love to listen to me. If only, as I said to you earlier, at least they had somebody that they could disagree with and formulate their own ideas even more strongly.
That's what drew me to you. That and one of my best friends in the world who, to be honest, he makes you look like a liberal at times. going back and forth with him, but to answer your question, how I found you, I had to search long and hard to find you. Eventually, I just thought about it and went onto your website, but I kept flipping through the station saying they can't just have him off everywhere. This is ridiculous. And lo and
behold, you're a classic red diaper dopa baby lawyer in San Francisco, liberal, and you like the show.
Yeah.
Well, how do you maintain being a grown man and an attorney and you're still a red diaper dopa baby? How is it possible?
Well, let's put it this way. I was raised by a very strong, independent woman, and yet at the same time, my father, Colonel in the United States Air Force.
So you have a father, you have a thing with your father. You can't admit he was right about anything.
No, actually, that's the exact opposite. I respect the military and what my father did for this country, God, more than anything. I will walk up to anybody I see in uniform.
Oh, wait, if you understand what national security issues are, how in the world can you not be alarmed at what Obama's doing in this country?
Because it's no different than what Bush was doing.
Well, at least we agree on that. Bush was a diehard anti-military militarist. It's a strange phenomenon, persecuting our Marines in Haditha for a crime they never committed. And now we have this fellow, Lieutenant Behenna, who I'm trying to defend by raising money for him. You as an attorney, can you help me with this one for a minute? Would you spend time on my website and read his story and tell me why this man is facing 15 years in Fort Leavenworth for defending himself in Iraq?
And I've already read it. And I've gone through the information, and I'll be honest with you. The only thing I can make of it, and what I rest my head at night soundly at times on, is a comment my father made to me once. Growing up, I always thought that everybody's dad came home with a briefcase, shackled to their wrist. But that was my dad. We were at, North Dakota and SAC headquarters in Nebraska. So he was up there.
So you came out of like the real Eisenhower Reagan tradition of dad, the straight shooter with the briefcase on the wrist. That's a rung, several rungs above the average grunt.
Exactly. And in talking to my father about this and other issues, he said, look, I hate to just say this because it sounds like it's a cop-out, but there's a lot of information that you don't know and you will never know related to this incident and other incidents that can never come out. So, it's...
Well, I agree with you, but in this case, as an attorney, I suspect that has to do with Mrs. Behenna being a prosecutor in Oklahoma City as much as it does with the actions of her hero son in Iraq. I think somebody's out to get her.
It wouldn't surprise me.
See, what I'm saying is I know that prosecutors are very jealous of their turf. Prosecutors can be very vindictive. They cross all political lines. This is not a liberal conservative thing. This is pure human emotion and human hubris. And sometimes somebody wants to hurt somebody else, and they do it through their children.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you've seen that in San Francisco courts.
Oh, God, yeah. I'll be honest. Santa Clara County, I love to be in court. Alameda County, I'll deal with it. San Francisco and San Mateo, oh, my God. It's a nightmare. The moment you walk in, you know something bad's going to happen.
And you are a liberal attorney in San Francisco. Well, look, you're exactly the demographic listener that I think I built my 15-year audience on here in San Francisco. And I'm frankly very reassured that you're starting to find me in your own way. In your case, through the website. So now I'm going to send you a free copy of Abandoned Britain. It'll come in a plain brown wrapper so that you can still hold your head up high to your postman.
Can I ask for a huge favor, Dr. Savage?
I don't know. You can. I don't know if I can answer it. Yes.
Is there any way? Because I'll tell you, when I said my friend that makes you look like a liberal,
yeah,
he's going to be so darn jealous that I've spoken to you. If you could just sign something for me and send it along so I can say, hey, look what I did.
You see, you must be a lawyer. You got a free book, and now you want two free books.
I am, you know?
I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to send you two free books. I need every liberal listener I can get in San Francisco. That's beautiful. Stay in the line. I mean it. Everyone who ever gets a promise usually always gets the book. I try to fulfill it. I send it to my fulfillment house. That's a great call. It means I'm starting to catch the audience that I once had here in San Francisco. It's not easy to refine an audience to refine you. It really isn't. You may think, oh, everyone knows. They don't know. We don't have a billboard campaign. We don't have a movie campaign. We don't have a TV campaign yet. We're going to have a TV campaign coming up here in San Francisco very soon. But remember, I'm on stations from Boston to San Diego. So let's go to Boston right now. Lucas, welcome to the Savage Nation from WRKO. And Lucas, what brings you to the show today?
First of all, good evening to you, fine gentlemen. I'm calling because, you know, two topics. You know, first of all, I want to thank you because throughout the years, you know, I'm an immigrant, you know, and you helped me, you know, develop, you know, my fluency in English, you know, by a long time now. So I got to thank you for
that.
I
understand. No, my use of language is a good tool for people who have English as a second language. I recognize that because I am the son of an immigrant. And in some ways, I do reflect that language and thought structure.
And the second thing is because, you know, I don't agree on one topic with you, you know, that you just mentioned, you know, like 2 weeks ago, that about, you know, the guy that stopped, you know, terrorists, you know, on the plane.
Yes, the Flying Dutchman, as I called him, who jumped across seats and subdued the Nigerian crotch bomber. What did you have to say about him?
Well, you said, you know, that why isn't the guy, you know, all over the media, and, you know, and why is not everybody, you know, paying attention to him? I think it's the best for him that actually, you know, the media or nobody, you know, is paying attention to him. Because can you imagine, you know, if the terrorists actually know anything about this guy, you know, I think his family, you know, and everybody around him, you know, would be dangerous.
Well, what does that say about the West, that we have to live in fear of enemies within who are not rounded up by secret police and thrown out of the country, that the heroes of our country have to hide out of fear of radical Muslims in their own country? Does that indicate to you that our national security apparatus is operational?
Well, I think not.
No, I think not also. Homeland Security should protect men like him and hold him up as a hero, not worry about some lone wolf Muslim radical who might hunt them down. Let them go to hell. Let the Homeland Security Department look for them in mosques. Let the FBI tap every mosque in America and find them before they kill the heroes of America. I'll be right back.
Yep, 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 whip, 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 mum, 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 bo, bo, dum, 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 bum, mum, 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 mum,
It is the Savage Nation on this Friday, late afternoon, early evening across America. Here are some of the new headlines that popped up. The Department of Justice just cleared Bush attorneys. That should be a tremendous blow to the psychopath tree sitters in Berkeley. The Department of Justice under Barack Obama finds that the Justice Department lawyers under George Bush did not, I repeat, did not commit professional misconduct when they authorized CIA interrogators to use waterboarding. So all you tree sitters in Berkeley, I'm sorry to tell you, it's time to come down from your roosts. The EPA is fighting back. They're saying that the science of global warming is just fine. Case closed. They don't want to debate it, of course. They don't want to use any scientific debate. They're saying that greenhouse gases pose real threat and the truth be damned. That's George Bush Obama's EPA. The science on global warming is okay. The case is closed. Anyone who says otherwise should be excommunicated and thrown out of the country. Now the left wing is asking, is the Texas plane crash a crime or terror? You see, the left-wing blogosphere is alive, demanding that this white male be called a terrorist. See, once they could call him a terrorist, then, of course, they've got the radical Muslims where they want them, which is in a safe haven. And I'll never figure that one out, but somehow the radical left has a natural affinity for the radical Muslim. I can't quite put two and two together. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255, but visit me online at michaelsavage.com. Speaking of calm, my toy poodle Teddy is calmly sleeping on his back as the show goes on and on and on, and I occasionally go up to him during the breaks, and I can't help but saying it. The toy poodle is a pleasant addition to any family. It's just amazing. He is a happy dog. Not all dogs are happy. Some are very, like, sad, serious. Like, the St. Bernard has a very serious, I want to, you know, like, carry a keg of brandy to you in the snow look. You can't say that a Rottweiler is a happy dog. You look like they'll tear your throat out. But a toy poodle is a happy dog. He is equally at home in the nursery as in the old age home. But they're very vain. Toy poodles are very vain. I got to tell you, you got to admire them, or else they, who are they, get nasty. They don't get nasty. They don't get mean like some dogs. But they do like naughty little things, like they dig at things, at furniture. What do you want to talk about now? Bill Clinton speaking on childhood obesity. How did this suddenly become a big problem? Mrs. Obama made that an issue. Childhood obesity now is her campaign. Why do first ladies who are so intelligent have to waste their time on such issues as this? Like Laura Bush, you know, she with the library thing. Did you really believe a minute of it? The librarian thing. Why do they always give them like meaningless jobs? We all know that they're co-presidents. Anyone married knows that their wife is smarter than them half the time. We know that they're the advisors behind the throne. So why do they have to act with stupidity? Europe doesn't put up with this. They don't go around talking about fat kids in Italy. Or in Spain, they talk about like fat children in Spain. The wife of the prime minister, the wife of the president. Frankly, I think they should both appear at conferences. I'm not a fan of either of them, but she's a smart woman. She has to waste her time talking about fat children. And now Clinton chimes in, childhood obesity, now it's his problem. And look who they choose as a spokesman. I mean, can you get anything more paradoxical than this? Bill Clinton speaking today in his Harlem office on childhood obesity. I don't believe this. There must be money in it for him. I guess there's something to do with some kind of money coming in from the government that his group will get. There's no other answer for it. Now, Al Sharpton can give a speech on childhood obesity in a Harlem office. That I would accept. He would be an expert on that subject. That I can get, understand. And I'm actually in favor of some of the stimulus money to go to him. Maybe it'll stop him from the bullhorns. And, you know, well, those days are gone. Look, people grow up. You know, people do leave things behind. As I said, you know, they don't spit in salad anymore necessarily, or no more Freddy's Fashion Mart with the bullhorn. I mean, he dines with O'Reilly. Remember that? They went to dinner together? That's amazing to me. All right, what else is in the news? Oink, oink, oink. How about the federal government? How about the federal government? Oink, oink, oink. 12 spending bills for this fiscal year, 09, contain 9,499 congressional earmarks worth nearly $16 billion. Oink, oink, oink. But Obama says it helped the little guy. Look, I said a lot of things this week. Some of them are worth taking home for the weekend to discuss. Here's the number one thing. The media has portrayed Obama as a sort of Robin Hood of the poor, that he is robbing from the rich to give to the poor. That's not true. He is robbing from the middle to give to the rich. Michael Savage said it. Prove me wrong. Do you know any poor people who've done better on Obama? Name one. Name one poor person who's actually doing better on Obama. I never met one. Now, name one rich person who's doing better on Obama. I can name 10. Let's start with Goldman Sachs, you know, go down the Citibank. Just go through the New York investment banks. I think you could find a short list of 10 people. They're all doing much better than they did under Bush, which is saying a lot, because they all did very well under Bush. So that's what I want to say. Don't fall for it, okay? The two-party system in America is like two-card Monte on 42nd Street and 8th Avenue. There's three shells and there's no peas. And no matter what you bet, you're going to lose. That's my opinion. And that's why when I say the Tea Party movement is being co-opted by the Republican Party, that's the second quote you should remember this week. So you got two quotes. You're going to be tested on Monday on an essay test.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Don't ever make her blue. Just tell her that you love her. Make sure you're thinking of her in everything you say and do.
It's Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation.
Take good care of my baby.
Some of the headlines that are worth talking about, as usual, I'm going to just run through them on my site. Then we have a special treat for you on the Savage Nation in this hour. Tea Party ignores immigration. I told you that on Thursday yesterday. They say that iconic talk show host Michael Savage railed against the, quote, solutions yesterday being offered by the fake Tea Partiers who have been co-opted by the Republicans. He added that borders, language, and culture are conspicuously missing. You're not kidding. Obama-obsessed left-wing professor kills three other professors, and the media has buried the story, instead focusing on the airplane crash that killed nobody. Don't miss this one. Michael Savage, through you, contributes another $50,000 to Michael Behana Defense Fund. Thank you, Savage Nation. George Will wrote an interesting article where he says Sarah Palin won't be president. She said she is not going to be president and will not be the Republican nominee unless the party wants to lose at least 44 states. I agree with them 100%. Asia Times writes an article, very convincing one, The Case for an Israeli Strike Against Iran. Read it and decide for yourself. The Israelis killed a Hamas terror leader, and now the world is hunting for the Israelis who killed the terror leader. So what does that tell you about the European Union and the British in particular? What side are they on? Are they on the side of democracy or on the side of radical Muslim terror? Now you understand why I've been banned in Britain. In case you missed this one, I don't think it made it to your local paper. Five Muslim soldiers were arrested at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, because they may have been trying to poison the food supply of the other soldiers. Hey, didn't read that this morning, huh? TV anchor mistakes Biden's ashes on his head for a bruise. Now, remember, Biden is a Catholic who was marking Ash Wednesday, the first day of Lent, and this British jerk thought that he banged his head on a ski lift. Shows you where these people are coming from, what they're worth. The Durham dirtbag, the Duke lacrosse accuser, was charged with attempted murder and assault. Remember that prize? Top UN climate official has quit. I'm reading the article headlines from michaelsavage.com. There's a nice picture up here about a rare, precious, actually priceless bronze statue. It's considered one of the greatest bronze statues to survive from ancient Greece, which is now in the Getty Museum in Los Angeles. A court has ordered that it be returned to Greece. You got to see the statue. You won't believe this. It's an astounding picture of what sculpture really is.
Looks better than the one they did of Little Barry in Indonesia.
Kind of, you think? On the bottom, Beowulf, a family dog is credited with keeping a little girl safe after she spent the overnight hours in 30-degree temperatures.
That's an amazing story.
So there's plenty out there. I mean, the big story is how Bob Barr, who works for the ACLU, immediately is picked up by the CPAC, the Conservative Convention, to give a speech on conservatism and conservative values. It's unbelievable to me that the people are this gullible and naive.
It's amazing. Bob Barr and Dick Armey went to work for the ACLU as soon as they left Congress, and now all of a sudden they're returning as if they're some sort of real conservatives. Clearly they don't want conservatives. They just want power at any cost.
Yes, but I'm surprised that CPAC – well, CPAC is run by rhinos, isn't it?
It's not a Tea Party movement, I'll put it that way. You know, it's more of an insider movement.
Right. It's the old boy network. Let's put it to you that way.
Yeah.
Now, the possible poisoning of the food supply at military bases by Muslims is being buried by the media. That's an interesting story. The suspicious Southern Poverty Law Center, which is not really into poverty except impoverishing those that they sue, claims the IRS building airplane attack was by a radical right winger. Can you believe this, Beowulf?
It's just disgusting. The media, they cover nothing.
Then the Dalai Lama went to visit Obama at the White House, but he was shown the rear door to leave.
Yeah, they walked him right past the garbage bags is what they did.
How insensitive can you get, Mr. Obama? I mean, you bring a holy man and you throw him out the back door past the garbage bags? And then you talk of, and then you talk about green energy?
Well, maybe they were compost bags. Let's be fair. Maybe he was trying to compost and be environmentally sensitive and demonstrate that to the Dalai Lama.
Bill Clinton spoke today on a very important topic, Beowulf. Did you see in his Harlem office?
Oh, yes. Yeah, the cheeseburger eater decided that he needs to address childhood obesity. And maybe that
now, how did this
for
become
him.
The biggest problem on earth, childhood obesity? Well, and is Bill Clinton the right man to lecture kids on childhood obesity? That would be like Bill Clinton lecturing schoolgirls on sexual proper morality.
It's about in the same league.
This is unbelievable. Tiger Woods again. I am sorry, Mr. Pinocchio. Pinocchio Woods.
Oh, yeah. He gave a whole big press. He wouldn't let the press in. He only had a group of assembled friends that he talked to.
Then we have... What else did we have that was phenomenally important today?
Oh, Obama was going off about how we needed to build more green cars, more environmental regulations, that sort of thing.
I should note before we pass on to the next topic that the listeners to the Savage Nation have sent us another $50,000, which we sent to the defense of Lieutenant Behenna, the Army Ranger who has been sentenced by the government to 25 years in prison for killing a known Al-Qaeda operative while serving in Iraq. And I want everyone listening to this show to understand that you do make a difference here in the Savage Nation. This is not just a show. I am not a Republican. This is a mission for me. And I want to thank every one of you, even if you have not sent Mr. Behenna any money, even if you only emailed him or wrote him a letter, it's giving him the hope that one day he will be freed.
It's been a huge fight for that family. Vicky Behenna came on the show and said to you that they had to mortgage their house. They spent $200,000 on this. And every little bit that the listeners do, helps pick up the bill for that.
Those are the headlines for the Savage Nation. I left New York 500 years ago. I went west, young man. And okay, so things thus far are working out, knock wood. But I did it to get away from the subways. I didn't like being jostled, the smells, the dirty raincoats, the friskers, the bunco artists. The whole thing was horrendous. Most people have to live with it. So you spend your whole life to avoid those people in that situation. Now, no matter who you are, if you fly anywhere, you're still going to be frisked by the same type of person that was on a subway that would feel a woman up. They have a TSA with a glove on. But it's the same thing. Basically, the same type of people. Who else would take a job like that? I think when you actually think about it, it's unbelievable to me. So anyway, that's why I say, other than that, there's no reason not to fly commercial. You're safer, probably.
Savage.
Let's do a review of this week. On Monday, we reviewed the Westminster Dog Show. Here they talked about the president's dogs.
President's Day is about our country's leaders, those who occupy the highest office in the land, serving their country, leaders of the free world. And as we pause for a moment to honor our presidents, let's hear it for their faithful companions, the first dogs. It is said that man's best friend is his dog, and in times of crisis, the love and companionship of a dog has given comfort and support to many a weary leader. And the tradition continues today. Bo, a young Portuguese water dog, is the latest presidential dog to call the White House home. As this President's Day draws to a close, America looks to New York City, where man's best friend enters the spotlight. And since 1877, the brightest spotlight shines on the Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show. There is only one, where 2,500 dogs vie to be best of the best, a champion among champions, the best in show.
I really like the description of this group of animules.
The toy dogs play a role that is much larger than the dogs themselves, for they are the true companion animals. They've been selectively bred for size and often for great style. Despite their small size, many of them are first-rate watchdogs, quick to announce the approach of strangers. They are intelligent, responsive, loyal little animals, and fill their job with great enthusiasm.
Here we come, the little guys.
Group, the little guys. You can't tell them that.
They all think they're big guys.
Not one in this group believes that they are the little guys.
True. Then we had Herb London talking about Fast Eddie, who was Al Capone's lawyer.
I'm reminded of a story that I'd love to tell, about two people, one in the city of Chicago during the 1920s, who was a lawyer for the Capone gang, and he became the wealthiest man in the city of Chicago. You may probably have seen him portrayed in at least a dozen films, including Public Enemy. The lawyer, who was named Fast Eddie in Chicago, became enormously wealthy because every single time a member of the Capone gang was arrested, he would find some technicality in which to get him off. As a consequence, he became enormously well-known, very powerful, very wealthy, as I've indicated. On one occasion, he seemed to get a guilty conscience, stepped down his steps, and as he was walking down his steps, 15 bullets filled his body. He was gone. The Capone gang was not going to take any chances with Fast Eddie.
He then told us about Butch O'Hare, for whom O'Hare Airport is named.
Let me go fast forward, however, and talk about a man named Butch O'Hare. Butch O'Hare was a pilot during World War II. On the occasion when he was in the Pacific, he was sent out on a mission. However, he looked at his oil gauge in the middle of the Pacific, and he found he didn't have enough fuel to continue the mission. Radios his captain and says, "I have to return to the aircraft carrier." Captain says, "Go ahead." As he's going back to the aircraft carrier, he notices a squadron of Zeros about to attack the aircraft carrier. Instead of going back and landing, he decides he's going to attack the Japanese Zeros. With his machine gun, he takes out two planes. He runs out of ammunition, and he flies into two of the aircraft, knocking off a wing on one, a tail on the other, taking out four planes, manages to limp back to the aircraft carrier. He wins the Navy Cross as a result of this. 2 years later, in a mission in the Pacific, he is shot down over the Pacific, and he receives the Congressional Medal of Honor posthumously. If you have traveled to Chicago and go to Terminal 1, between Terminal 1 and Terminal 2, you will see the statue of Butch O'Hare, an airport that is named after him. It will tell about the heroic actions of Butch O'Hare, but what it does not tell you is that Fast Eddie was the father of Butch O'Hare.
Unbelievable.
In this country, one never knows how things are going to unfold. One of the great philosophers of the 20th century, Fats Waller, once said, "One never knows, do one." Now, let me assure you that we don't know what will happen in the future. I've been very discouraged. There's no question about the bleak portrayal of American life that we've heard during the course of this presentation. But I'm also aware of the fact that there's tremendous energy in this room. There are great people in America. There are people in this country who are prepared to take out their pitchforks and begin in the counter-revolution. I'd like to think that the counter-revolution begins right here in this room this day. We are going to try and create a grassroots movement across the country. We have bloggers here. We have C-SPAN here. We have Pajamas Media here. There is no question that many will hear the message that you've heard today. Now, we are looking for your energy. We are looking for your volunteerism. We are looking for the financial support that you might provide to this organization. Midge and Carol and Jed and Ruth, they have provided the ammunition that is necessary to keep this going. We need your help. Many of you have already left, but if you can spread the word and say to people that this is the beginning of a great venture. We want to take our country back. We believe we can do so.
What an incredible story. Here is Dr. John Drew talking about Obama and his Marxist background.
Well, my most vivid memory is how insistent he was in arguing a Marxist-Leninist point of view. He made a very principled, dedicated, impassioned argument that, in fact, a real revolution was coming, and that, in a sense, we should all get on board and prepare ourselves physically. And he definitely saw America as the enemy. He believed that the ruling elite had rigged our economic system so that it caused people to be poor. And it was immoral and it was wrong. And the only way you could tip things back so that we all could enjoy a more prosperous lifestyle was to redistribute the wealth. My sense of him is that he was a pure Marxist socialist, and I didn't see him thinking in terms of race. And so I just think that's surprising, you know, given what he wrote in Dreams of My Father. I saw no evidence of that.
Wait, there's more.
What's crucial, I think, for me to get across, though, is that Barack Obama was part of a larger cultural system. I actually established the Marxist Student Association at Oxy in 1976. For my girlfriend at the time to tell me that Barack Obama was one of us was highly significant.
Right.
There was a sense that the Soviet Union was a more advanced society, and even though it had made mistakes under Stalin, there was still greater equality over there, and it was a better model for us than what we saw with our existing U.S. government. I'd go to my grave saying that he was arguing Marxist-Leninism. The reason I think he's a Marxist is because I saw it with my own eyes. And I think he needs to explain to the American people what were the logical steps he took to get out of that Marxist socialist perspective. Personally, I think he's still a socialist. I think that was his objective in pursuing the public option. I think that's what he was going for in the Sotomayor appointment. So I don't see him tacking to the center the way some people are suggesting. I see him as the kind of guy whose conscience will be bothered if he moves to the side.
It's just as I've been warning you all along. That's it for our Savage Review of the Week.
Savage.
It is Friday, and here's James Hurston with a report on the shenanigans going on in Hollywood.
Can you believe the timing? This month, the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, despite the revelation that the so-called scientific methods and conclusions that were used to promote this global warming agenda were fraudulent, published a document that asked public companies to disclose certain material relating to, you guessed it, global warming. Now, they probably had trouble delivering the hard copies because, the record blizzards stopped them. Now, the SEC was pushed to take action by the United Nations-influenced global investor groups. And we know some of these global investors. Could we name them? George Soros? And now one of the leading advocates of the theory of man-made global warming, Professor Phil Jones, has conceded there's been no warming of the Earth for the last 15 years. He stepped down. This was the former director of the Climate Research Unit of the University of East Anglia. He was among the scientists who were embarrassed by ClimateGate, these revelations of, fakery. And now the UN global warming head, the executive secretary, Ivo Dubois, a Dutch bureaucrat, he's the guy who led the international climate change conferences. He's stepped down effectively in July. He's embarrassed. And scientists and journalists, to their credit, demanded the data to verify claims of man-made caused global warming, and it finally turned out that this climate research unit wasn't a research unit at all because they destroyed most of the original data, and it was reported by the Times of London, who's doing some good work here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, despite all of this fraud, the same SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, these are the guys who couldn't stop Bernie Madoff. They couldn't stop the investment banking derivative games that caused our financial crisis. They've issued this document that, if followed, would have U.S. public companies, the ones that hire people, paying out big bucks for some sort of an expert guessing game as to the existence of global warming, which we know doesn't exist, and the companies will be disclosing possible physical, legal, regulatory, financial effects of climate change on their business operations to both investors and the SEC. Now, the UN persuaded these investor groups to pressure companies and government regulatory agencies like the SEC to adopt these kinds of strict disclosure requirements. And look, what the UN is trying to do, it's the same thing the Obama administration is trying to do, and that is to institutionalize global climate change, global warming, as part of business operations. Back in 2005, the UN Secretary General brought a group of the world's largest institutional investors to put together what were called the Principles for Responsible Investment. They were able to corral representatives from 20 institutions, investment institutions. They came from 12 countries. And in addition, at this UN party, this shindig, they brought along a 70-person multi-stakeholder group of experts from the investment industry, from governmental organizations and academia, a bunch of leftists, a bunch of globalists. So they came up with this PRI, the Principles for Responsible Investments, a consensus paper out of these meetings that were held in 2005 and 2006. This PRA gives the UN and these investment professionals on the left influence on what they call the environmental, social, and corporate governance that can affect the performance of investment portfolios.
Are you kidding?
So the entities eligible to sign this consensus paper include people that own assets, organizations that own assets, big investment managers, professional service partners, and there are 693 international signatories to this document. And they subscribe to a bunch of principles. They say that they will seek appropriate disclosure. Remember, this happened in 2009 on environmental issues by those entities in which we invest. And they include actions like asking for standardized reporting on the environment, asking for environmental issues to be integrated in financial reports, asking for information from companies whether or not they are adopting or adhering to relevant environmental standards or international initiatives, and supporting shareholder initiatives, meaning sort of shareholder uprisings, and resolutions that promote what they call environmental disclosure. Look, this is just a part of the UN's quest to seek the global governance over the environment, over social issues, over corporate governance issues. Global governance, I said. During the run-up to the December 2009 climate change conference in Copenhagen, the UN used this document, the PRI, to emphasize the need for investors to pressure companies to disclose how climate change might impact their business operations.
Crazy.
As part of their Caring for Climate series, the PRI published this 21-page paper. It was titled Investor Leadership on Climate Change, and it encouraged investor groups, these are big institutional investor groups, to focus on four broad areas relating to climate change, to increase the allocation of assets to global warming and climate change mitigation and adaptation projects, to encourage leadership in building global warming and climate change into investment processes, shareholder leadership of global warming and climate change activity, and leadership in policies involving climate change, global warming. The Climate Disclosure Standards Board, which was formed at the 2007 annual meeting of the World Economic Forum, has been working to develop a globally accepted framework based on existing standards for, get this, corporate reporting on climate change.
No.
At a meeting at the Investor Summit on Climate Risk that was held in January 2010, just recently, at the United Nations headquarters in New York, a group of global organizations issued a joint statement. And what it said is it called on national regulators, federal regulators, and countries around the world, including the aforementioned Securities and Exchange Commission, to require companies to disclose to their investors material climate-related risks and the programs in place to manage those risks. You see what's coming here. Less than 1 month later, the SEC now published this document for public companies to set forth the SEC's existing disclosure requirements as they apply to climate change and global warming matters. So the SEC is just responding immediately to what this UN group meeting at an investor summit asked for.
This is unbelievable to me.
And the SEC sets forth pertinent non-financial statement disclosure rules relating to global warming, climate change, and discusses their application to disclosure of specific climate change-related matters. Some of the highlights of things that now are public companies that are registered with the SEC will have to do include things like describe its business, that of its subsidiaries, including disclosure about the form of organizations, the principal products and services, customers, competitors, and disclose any material estimated capital expenditures for what they call environmental control facilities for the current fiscal year and the next fiscal year. They have to describe any material pending legal proceedings that relate to climate. They have to assess whether any enacted climate change, global warming legislation, like cap and trade, is reasonably likely to have a material effect on the company and the company's financial condition. To disclose risk factors regarding the existing or pending legislation or regulation that relates to climate change or global warming. And companies are going to have to disclose the impact on their business of treaties or international agreements or accords that relate to, guess what, global warming and climate change.
I'm sick of this.
They have to disclose any new opportunities, demand for new products or services due to global warming or climate change. Any significant physical effects of climate change that have the potential to affect a company's operations. That's sure a lot of stuff for companies to do in a down economy, and it's based on junk science. The UN and investor groups who have placed their trust in fake science now have our own Securities and Exchange Commission adopting and implementing expensive, extensive, and harmful disclosure requirements that inhibit companies in raising capital. True insanity. Thankfully, sanity reigns here at the Savage Nation. Back to you, my friend.
Thanks for the report, James.
Savage.
Obama was out there again today, pushing his propaganda, his left-wing agenda. Here he is at a stooge town hall meeting in Nevada saying the economy is broken because we weren't environmentally sensitive enough.
What is true is that a lot of us depend on dirty sources of energy, and a lot of us depend on really inefficient cars and buildings and et cetera. And so there's got to be a transition. We're not going to suddenly get all our energy from wind or all our energy from sun because we just don't have the technology to do it. But what we should be doing is planning over the next 20, 30 years to move in that direction. That's what countries like China are doing. That's what countries like France are doing. That's what countries all across Europe are doing and all across Asia are doing. We don't want to be left behind. We're the only ones who have kind of missed the boat. So we're still using 20th century technologies and everybody else is producing 21st century technologies. Look what happened with the car. We started getting our clock cleaned when consumers decided they wanted a cleaner car, and suddenly everybody was buying their cars from Japan or now South Korea. And we wanted to make sure that that doesn't happen when it comes to wind turbines. It doesn't happen when it comes to solar energy, etc.
And a solution? Why? More regulation, of course. More government.
There are no mileage standards on cars. Then people end up making Hummers, right? And everybody drives Hummers until finally gas gets so crazy, and at a certain point people start saying, maybe I should get a more fuel-efficient car. But if you've got a fuel efficiency standard in place that says your car needs to get 20 miles a gallon or 30 miles a gallon, suddenly all these engineers are thinking, well, how do we do that? And all these companies start coming up with new technologies that make your cars more fuel efficient. Ultimately, you end up seeing jobs and businesses thriving in response to the regulation that's been put there. Now, that's one way to regulate, is just to tell people you got to produce more energy-efficient cars.
And then, of course, the entire left-wing conspiracy in the media is blaming the Texas airplane suicide crash on conservatives. Here's a nobody from CNBC, Greg something or other, blaming it on talk show hosts.
Let me just rant for a second. I'll probably get a lot of emails for saying this, but lately I've been listening to Limbaugh and Glenn Beck. They're saying crazy stuff about the apocalypse coming economically. They've got people scared that this economy is falling off a cliff, that the government is socialistic, they're going to ruin things. I mean, and here you have the Fed today raising rates because the economy's getting better. You listen to the Glenn Beck types, these were the same people 15 years ago who said, I can prove the Clintons had 72 people killed. I mean, there's all this crazy stuff that Obama wasn't born in the U.S., that the economy is really headed off a cliff. And I think the tone has gotten way out of control, and it's influenced a lot of very gullible people, like this poor guy who killed himself yesterday.
You see, the radical left-wing conspiracy will say anything to maintain political power. And here's the despicable Mark Potok of the suspicious Southern Poverty Law Center comparing Joe Stack to Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah, as a general matter, his ideas seem connected to at least some of the core ideas. Not long after the Oklahoma City bombing, a man attempted to blow up what I think is the very same building in Austin.
Just like Bob Barr at the CPAC convention, the Republican sellout, Bob Barr, who went to work for the ACLU and is now blabbering at the CPAC convention like he's still a conservative.
We have something, for example, here in America that nobody else has, even our brothers and sisters over in the United Kingdom. I was over there last week speaking before Oxford University, and many of the students after my and during my presentation lamented to me that they did not have, do not have in the United Kingdom, despite whatever freedoms they may have left, and there sure are many of them these days over there, they are worried and they wish that they had a written constitution.
Yep. And they lament that they don't have freedom of speech, which you take away if you had the power to do so, I'm sure. Now, Beowulf, today is your what day?
Today is my birthday, sir. Thank you for bringing it up.
Do you care telling everyone how old my executive producer is?
I'll admit it. I'm 34 years old.
Now, how does it feel to be a 34-year-old, white, married, heterosexual male with children?
I feel like a complete anomaly in the contemporary United States.
So you feel rarer than a true Victorian in San Francisco, huh?
I think that's about it. Fortunately, I'm lucky enough to live outside a major urban area, so I'm able to protect my children from the influences of that. But it seems like most of the members of my generation have decided to pursue other activities that don't involve family, marriage, etc.
Well, but you live away from San Francisco.
Thank God. It makes it a lot easier. You know, maybe if a few of the people who, you know, a few of those conservatives would move to other areas, they'd find it easier to
sustain. But what would you say to young people out there listening to the show? Do you think it's still worth raising a family, Beowulf? Would you do it all over again? I mean, it's a tough question.
I would in a second. I mean, it's always difficult in many respects. I mean, it's a struggle to raise a family, but the benefits that you get, you know, the satisfaction you get from looking in the eyes of your wife, looking in the eyes of your children every day, you know, are absolutely beyond measure.
Well, that's a very important point, and there's no sense in making it a cynical, you know, conclusion, which I certainly could do. It ran through my mind. that you certainly, you know, you certainly don't want to be wasting your days with all of the playgirls out there looking for free love.
No, no.
I mean, where does that lead? Where does that lead to, Beowulf? You know, joy and happiness in your old age. You don't want that.
Tiger Woods, I am not.
You don't want to spend your days chasing beautiful women or having them chase you, Beowulf, because as you well know, it's liable to make you happy. We can't have that because you'll be punished in the next world for that.
I'm going to deny all of this deny knowledge of all knowledge of this conversation to my wife.
Well, I didn't. You didn't have it. I did.
Fair enough. Thank you very much.
All I did was tickle your funny bone. But you know, the truth is that I've known men who have not gotten married who are older men, and they all say to me one thing: nice men.
Yeah.
And they did well in life. They have one regret: they have no children.
Yeah. No, it's there's nothing to compare to it. There really isn't. It's impossible to explain unless you've had a family.
Yes, until you've seen your child born and look in her eyes, you don't know what it is to actually be a full person.
It's absolutely true. It's absolutely true.
Okay, rock and roll. I want some rock and roll.
Don't know why I love you. Don't know why I care.
It's Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.